This is our league, and this is your league. From the 55-yard line on CFL America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Stand by, 15 seconds to air. Stand by, all cameras and videotape.
Ready with your opening graphics. Stand by, Howard. Here we come, Frank. Ready, Don.
Stand by, audio, your opening music, and roll tape.
Take tape.
Pride and poise. Commitment to excellence. Just win, baby. The Raider mystique was the vision of one man, Al Davis. But before 1976, it was largely unrealized. Oakland never won when it mattered most.
The Baltimore Colts are the AFC champions, and it's on to the Super Bowl.
Between 1968 and 1975, the Raiders played in six AFC championship games and lost all six, each time to the eventual Super Bowl champion.
When you get as close as we had gotten and then not to be able to get it done, and then to get so close, the frustration just continued to mount.
Tough guys are tough guys on the field, but football players are no different than anybody else. You really feel bad when you lose. Maybe guys have too much pride or have an image of being too tough to cry outwardly. But I've seen guys that are really hurt by not winning, and I've been one of them. We've been bridesmaids a lot of times.
Hang up your hats. It's down to one big play. Fourth down and 10 yards to go.
While the Raiders were continually jilted at the championship altar, the Pittsburgh Steelers spent much of the 70s married to the Lombardi Trophy.
And there's a collision. It's caught out of the air.
Pittsburgh's victories were usually controversial, but that still spelled trouble for head coach John Madden. Since his hiring in 1969, Madden had won more games than any NFL coach, but had failed to take his team to a Super Bowl.
You did hear Madden couldn't win the big one, but I used to say, man, before the game, tell me when there's a little one. We won a lot of big games, a lot of regular season games, a lot of big games to get to playoffs, and a lot of playoff games.
Under the gun, Marty throws,
when the Raiders ended Miami's two-year reign as world champions in the Sea of Hands game, they did it for their coach.
We beat the Dolphins. I went right to the sideline and gave John that ball because he deserved it.
Philip Piano gets Madden the football. He destroyed.
bother me if I read something about myself, but it would bother me even more about John. He was our man. Us as players loved him, and you had to watch John operate. On the sideline, he was a maniac.
Hey, throw the damn flag!
Which was beautiful.
Hey, you jerk! You big jerk! You don't call. Never call one on them?
But during the week, the X's and O's, everything had to be perfect. He prepared us so well. And when we lost, it wasn't John Madden's fault. I guarantee you.
I don't believe in that thing that a team can't win the big one. I've been in playoff games. We've been in championship games. Of course, we haven't won it, but we really feel that that's ahead.
I was never frustrated because I knew we were good. I knew we were close. And we never lost to a bad team. We lost to some of the greatest teams in the history of the NFL. The worst thing you could do is get into the playoffs, lose a championship game, and panic. Because all we did was maybe need a first down here, a call here, and we would have been there. The guys that had to be frustrated were the guys that won two games.
The 1975 season ended with another crushing defeat.
Oh, that's tough. It's cold. Very cold.
Playing on the frozen turf of Three Rivers Stadium, the Raiders were put on ice in the AFC Championship.
That was a very good football team. And when we lost to the Steelers in 75, I just couldn't believe it. Now I started actually getting, a little spooked.
There was a lot of hard hitting by both sides. I think it was a very emotional game. There was a hell of a lot of meaning to this game. As you know, the winner goes to the Super Bowl and the loser goes home.
Losing was dulling the luster of the silver and black. The Raiders needed to win it all in 1976, or history would remember them as a team that couldn't win the big one. If the Raiders were ever going to become a champion, they would have to beat the Steelers. In the first game of the 1976 season, Pittsburgh led by two touchdowns with 5 minutes remaining.
They came right out, mate. They got ahead of us, but we did have one of Kenny Stabler's great comeback games, and we took him down. Kenny to Casper.
Stabler is back to pass. He waits. He fires. He's got Casper. Touchdown, Raiders!
Kenny to Branch.
Here comes the rush. He ducks under it. He's running to the left. He throws.
Once we got going, we could score quick. Give Kenny an inch, he would take a yard.
Stabler rolling to the left, he could take it in. He tucks it under, he's at the two. Touchdown, Raiders! Well, it's all even at 28 off. 105 left.
The Silver and Black's defense left Terry Bradshaw black and blue.
Fires, it's broken up. It's intercepted by the Raiders at the 15.
And Oakland handed the world champions a stunning defeat.
This will be an effort of 21 yards. Snap, spot, kick. Good. John Madden shows at least some jubilance and exuberance.
It was a beautiful way to beat him because we semi took the heart out of him a little bit.
Oakland's victory was overshadowed by an escalating controversy. In the 1975 AFC Championship, George Atkinson had knocked Lynn Swann out of the game. In the season opener, Oakland's hard-hitting safety did it again, and Pittsburgh's coach launched a media offensive.
Chuck Knoll said that they were the criminal element of the NFL, but that was the way that those guys played. George clubbed him with a forearm, knocked him out of the game. Maybe a little outside of the rules, but that was George's way of setting the tone for the game.
I was nowhere near the football, and the ball wasn't even thrown to me. If he was playing a game of football, he would have tried to make the tackle on Franco Harris, who ran right past him. The blow was illegal, delivered with what I would seem to be some type of malice. It's our contention. It was basically criminal.
We never go out on the field with the intentions of trying to hurt anyone, but we go out with the intentions of getting our job done. If he don't want to get hit, his best bet is not to show up when we play Sunday, because I guarantee he will get hit.
Anytime he comes in my area or George's area to catch a ball, he's going to get hit, and he's going to get hit hard. He's done a lot of mouth and off. Personally, I think he's more interested in being an announcer than he is a football player.
When we played Pittsburgh, it was a physical game, and those things are going to happen. You know, it wasn't only George Atkinson and Swan.
Pittsburgh was just like us. Very tough, very intimidating. I've seen Joe Green kick guys, stomp on guys, and he's a Hall of Fame player. I've seen Mel Blount grab Cliff Branch and pick him up and shake him like a rag doll and dump him on his head. Our team played within the rules. We were just so physical that a lot of people always accused you of these things because they couldn't beat you.
The Swan incident magnified the Raiders' reputation as outlaws, and the legend of Atkinson only grew.
George Atkinson was the culprit this time, except that Atkinson outdid his teammates by being hit with two penalties on the same play.
If the Raiders were above the law, it was because their coach refused to lay down one.
We had no rules. There's no rules. I mean, show up and play your hardest. John would preach that, and we would do it.
These are the greatest athletes in the world. They're like artists, and if you take their creativity away from them by making them robotic, then they're going to play like robots. But if you give them individuality and if you give them some freedom, then they can be and play the way they are.
The Raiders had the most bizarre group of misfits in NFL history. The Twos, number 72, John Matuszak, had been cut by three teams. Tight end Dave Casper was a ghost. And there was nothing friendly about the assassin, Jack Tatum.
Phil Villapiano, number 41, his nickname was Fu, F-U. He grew this weird-looking Fu Manchu mustache one year and was wearing it around Santa Rosa and got in a fight with a bunch of bikers, and the bikers beat him up.
You got Happy Fella, John Fella. Don't upset Happy Fella, because he will tear your head off.
Now there's a little bit of milling around going on. Lambert is off to one side, and they've got Vella off to the other.
Our left corner, Skip Thomas, his nickname became Dr. Death.
Dr. Death at the 25, and Doctor has saved the day.
On a team where the inmates seemed to be running the asylum, linebacker Ted Hendricks earned the nickname the Mad Stork.
His first day at practice, he rode a horse out to the middle of the field. On the horse, he had on his Oakland Raider practice uniform, and he was wearing a German helmet with number 83 on the side of it for who knows why. And we all just kind of looked at each other and said, fits right in.
In the opening weeks of the 76 season, the Renegade Raiders rode all over the competition.
Setting up, steps up,
Oakland reeled off three straight wins, but domination of the regular season, a Raider tradition, would prove nothing. After opening the 76 season with three straight victories, Oakland was humbled in New England. The Patriots handed the Raiders their worst defeat since 1963.
Oh, we got the hell kicked out of us. Looking back on it, go up there and get thumped the way that we did. Maybe it's a little bit of a wake-up call. Maybe it's a little bit of a blessing in disguise. Maybe you're not quite as good as you think you are.
It's not something that you can say, that's okay. It was just one of those things. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes we could make. They really played better than we did, and they beat us.
No one else would beat the Raiders in all of 1976. The silver and black demolished the competition with their trademark, the bomb.
Throwing the bomb to Branch. Branch against Jones. Branch, a great catch. Five-yard line. Touchdown, Raiders!
Oakland's vertical passing game was devastating. Even a mountain of penalties could not stop the Raiders' march to the summit of the NFL.
The referees, they got a pat on the back if they could, you know, throw more flags on us than the other team. And maybe they were coached to do it. Don Shula at that time was in charge of the competition committee, the lily white Miami Dolphins that were as nasty as anybody else, but they never got a penalty called on. It's like, let's get these Raiders out of here and make everybody else's lives easier.
A lot of people speculated within our locker room. They don't like Al. They don't like John. They don't like all of our characters. Throw as many penalties as you will, as long as you win, no big deal.
When the Raiders hosted Green Bay in late October, they were flagged 17 times and accumulated more penalty yards than rushing yards.
Looks for Brandt now. Looks to the left. Throws. Touchdown, Raiders!
But the Snake threw 3 touchdowns in 9 minutes to bury the Packers.
But it's caught by Brandt. He's
over. I tell you, ever since the Atkinson and Tatum, the officials is watching the game closer, and they is calling more penalties now than they ever called before. Any little thing a guy do, they call a penalty.
In the last 3 weeks, the penalties have really jumped up. You know, early there was some criticism on the football and the violence in football, and I think that maybe they're trying to show that this isn't true and, you know, making a different game out of it.
Nobody played the game quite like Ken Stabler.
Okay, in the huddle today, we got the Snake at quarterback, the kid from Alabama.
The Snake succeeded Broadway Joe Namath at Alabama and learned from the master how to score on and off the field.
Stabler, he fires. He's got Kesper. Touchdown, Raiders!
Everybody's metabolism is different. Some people need 8 hours. Some people need 3 hours. I don't really need an awful lot of sleep. I would read the game plan by the light of the jukebox sometimes. How much sleep do you need to go play 3 hours?
Snake, when the going was easy, Snake would get bored. When the going was tough, he was ready to play. He would be better in the fourth quarter if it was a tight game and we were behind. Conversely, if we were ahead by 20, 30 points, he could call a play in the huddle, and by the time he got to the line of scrimmage, forget what he just called.
Despite Stabler's short attention span, Madden delegated the play calling to the Snake.
He basically pitched the playbook to me and said, go win. It made me a better player to have that responsibility. What comes out of your mouth is going to dictate, you know, a lot of success. You have the ability to take people from a 2-car garage to a 3-car garage by what you call in the huddle.
I liked it when the players were in the huddle and they say, okay, this is what we want to do. This is a play we're calling.
Hey, Snake, let's don't butcher that damn 61 man on that blue goal.
Rather than a play being sent in and saying, hey, this is what they want us to run. When you put they on it, I think you kind of separate. Now, we're not responsible for this. When you put we on it, then we're all in it together.
Wide receiver Fred Biletnikoff often had his number called in Stabler's huddle, even though his nerves couldn't stomach the pregame anticipation.
All the time, he'd be smoking a cigarette. You know, he's like a 2-pack a guy day since he was 10 years old. And he'd push his helmet back on his head, and he would go in the John and throw up, I mean Ralph, for 20 minutes in there, and then go to the edge of the tunnel and take one last drag of his cigarette and flip it and pull his face mask down and go make the Hall of Fame.
Long pass, a leap in the end zone. Biletnikoff makes the catch. Touchdown, Raiders!
Stabler's other wide receiver, Clifford Branch, was anything but nervous.
When he was a young player, he would maybe in the third quarter say, hey, coach, I can beat my guy deep. And after he'd played for 5 or 6 years, the national anthem just finished, and he was right next to me and said, coach, I can beat my guy deep. I said, Cliff, we haven't even played it down yet. How do you even know who your guy is?
Branch committed highway robbery without a gun. Touchdown, Raiders!
After a 7-1 start, everyone was gunning for the silver and black. In the Windy City, Stabler was sidelined with a concussion, but the Snake came off the canvas to
KO the Bears with a pair of bombs.
Stabler back to pass again from midfield, throwing a deep bomb, going to Branch against Leibers. Leibers knocks it down. Branch catches it. Touchdown, Raiders!
The winds of fate were finally blowing in the Raiders' direction.
Puff waits. The snap, the spot, the kick on the way. It's high enough.
Of them missing a field goal in the wind, the weather conditions played to our favor that day, and you know, you're lucky to get out of there.
The Oakleys continue to live by the skins of their collective teeth.
I don't think you ever felt this is our year because we catch a break in Chicago. No, we need to catch a break in Pittsburgh.
Since the mid-60s, the Silver and Black had won more games than any organization, and the hallmarks of Raider football had become legend. Physical, dominant blocking. The vertical passing game.
Going deep to Branch again, he's got a step! Touchdown!
A relentless assault on the quarterback. But the greatness of the Raiders came from an attitude. Al Davis once said, "I will do anything to win." And he wanted players who would win at all costs.
Pitts, I hit him with a forearm a while ago, so he's out. He's out on his feet. Oh, yeah.
The type of player that Al brought in had that type of attitude that we wanted to be tough, that we liked being disliked. I think half of our team was on a work release program just to play.
You gonna have any fights this week?
Oh man, we gotta have some fights.
Nobody enjoyed a good Donnybrook more than sixth-year linebacker Phil Villapiano.
I just liked to fight. I just could not stop myself. I went to Bowling Green. If I threw a punch, they sent me back to New Jersey. When I was with the Raiders, if I threw a punch, that was good. As long as it was at the right guy. They used to stand there like a telegram or something from league office. "Dear Mr. Villapiano, you have been fined $75 for fighting." John must have taken care of all my fighting problems too, because I never had to pay a dime.
Here's a flag. There's a big pileup. Here come all the Raiders. Holy Toledo, it's a free-for-all.
People said that we had renegades, but they were my renegades, so I didn't think they were renegades. I never sat around and said, "Boy, I got a lot of renegades here." If that's the way they're going to portray you, you know, I just figured, let's take it. You know, if that's what they want to say we are, we're really not, but we'll be that.
Everything kind of fit. Oakland being a very tough blue-collar city, very tough blue-collar team. Al being a tough guy. John being kind of a blue-collar type guy. Our logo being a pirate, wearing the color black.
Nobody in the league was wearing black and flaunting black like our owner, Mr. Davis. And then on game day, he would wear lily white.
Everyone refers to the Raiders as the bad guys, are you?
Yeah, and I like that image. I think a lot of our players like the image. You know, we wear black. You see the cowboy movie, and a guy has a black hat and a white hat. The white hat's usually the good guy, and the black hat's the bad guy. And we got some physical players on our team. That's the way you have to play to win, and that's the way we play.
Anytime you were playing a team with a dark jersey, you would have your protective, you know, hand or arm color would be dark. Anytime you played a team that was wearing a white jersey, your protective things on your hands would be white so that you couldn't see them holding.
The Raiders were always looking for an edge. Fred Biletnikoff had one, smeared on his socks.
He would get a big handful of stickum, and he would rub the stickum all over. And then he would take a spray can of something you could probably lay brick with, and he would just spray that stickum. You throw him a ball in the first quarter, he's got grass stains everywhere on him. It looked like he'd been playing for a month.
Biletnikoff used so much stickum, he needed to be spoon-fed chewing gum. But that was not the only suspicious activity on the Raiders' sideline.
We had a guy named George Anderson who was our trainer, and he was like in the CIA or something. They would have experts in demolition or something. George was an expert in pads, probably most of them illegal. George added to my gloves. What he did was he took the stuff from the, like you make cast out, he put it in the hot water, and then he molded it for me. What I essentially had was two casts. So when I hit somebody, my boom, that was my first shot, right to their eye. I could take them down if I hit them just perfect. I used to like to call it the rake and the can opener. When you got them and you had them in the throat, you do like that, you know, and you could pop the helmet off, that would be the can opener. One time, O.J. Simpson, they hit him just perfect. They showed this tackle I made for the whole year. Juice's helmet came off, and helmet went flying, and he dropped to his knees and like this. I contribute that to our wonderful trainer that was a master of illegal pads. Look at John Matusak's arm or Gene Upshaw's arms. The pads on those arms were Bob Brown's thumb. He had a fake broken thumb for like 7 years. But what he used to do was come up and deliver this into like Elsie Greenwood's stomach, and he could drop Greenwood with one thumb.
I mean, if they were illegal or not, you know, I'm not sure. Anything that you're wearing that is different has to be checked by the umpire in the pregame warm-up. Of course, you could not wear it in the pregame warm-up and then put it on for the game. I know that.
In his first practice with the silver and black, Phil Villapiano learned who carried all the weight in the Raider organization.
I'm being coached by Ray Malavasi. And this guy on the sideline just kept commenting and telling me what to do. And it was driving me nuts. And I thought it was somebody's father. So I went back in the huddle and I said, Ray, get that guy away from me. Get him away from me. Tell him to just shut up. I can't concentrate with him. Ray goes, Phil, that's your boss. I went, what? He says, that's Al Davis. I went, oh my God, I didn't know that.
The Raiders' owner was omnipresent and such a charismatic figure, reporters often assumed that Davis was pulling all the strings.
The last thing we want to do is make excuses.
Was it turnovers, Al, more than anything else?
Yeah, my name's John. A hell of a time, I know, but anyway, John thinks that...
Well, it's an excellent rumor, but unfortunately it isn't true. John Madden coaches our football team. In 1969, when John was appointed head coach, my role with the Oakland Raiders changed from one of direction. I used to direct the football team, even though I was the owner and not coaching, to one of assistants.
Working for Al Davis was great. We worked together. I always said the best job a coach can have is determined by how many people you have between you and the owner. There was no one between he and I. I mean, there was no general manager, no one else. So anything that I needed, I didn't have to go through, you know, layers. I just went right to Al, and the whole time that I coached, I was never turned down for anything.
Davis's bad boy reputation obscured how good the Raiders really were. Hall of Famers Art Shell, number 78, and Gene Upshaw, number 63, anchored what may have been the greatest offensive line in NFL history.
It's sort of nice when you turn the corner and you look into that defensive back's face and he looks a little frightened because he's got 260 pounds right there.
Snake Stabler could throw the ball to Hall of Fame wide receiver Fred Biletnikoff or Hall of Fame tight end Dave Kasper.
The pass is caught by Kasper!
If the offense stalled, the Raiders' Hall of Fame coach could call on Hall of Fame linebacker Ted Hendricks and Hall of Fame cornerback Willie Brown.
And he looks and throws, intercepted by the Oakland Raiders, Willie Brown!
By late November, Oakland had won 7 straight games and clinched its 5th straight division crown.
When you clinch your division, it doesn't mean anything. That thing you go back to, hey, you can't win the big one. There's only one big one, and that's, you know, you got to win that Super Bowl. If you don't win that one, none of this other stuff means anything.
The Raiders' 13th game meant a lot. Oakland's 11-1 record guaranteed home field advantage throughout the playoffs. But the fate of the Steelers and Bengals would be determined on Monday Night Football.
The scenario is this. We beat the Bengals, the Steelers are in, the Bengals are out. We lose to the Bengals are in, the Steelers are out.
So the thinking was, they don't want to play Pittsburgh, they want to play Cincinnati, so they're going to go lose. That's the worst thing that you can say about someone that they lost on purpose. Just for the sake of your organization, just for the sake of football, just for the sake of what's right. You got to go win.
The Raiders were a collection of renegades. But while some might accuse them of cheating an opponent, they would never cheat the game.
Back is Stabler, pumps once, goes down the middle of Casper, wide open, touchdown Raiders!
I couldn't even think of an NFL team ever laying down, especially on Monday night, especially against a team like the Bengals, because we hated them too. We hated everybody.
Stabler rolling to the left, throws a quick touchdown to Casper.
We just kept pounding these guys. Coach wanted them annihilated, and we did it to them.
Looks into the end zone, fires. Polemnikov, touchdown Raiders.
We knocked Cincinnati out of the playoffs.
France one-on-one with Riley, a leaping catch, touchdown Raiders.
And we put Pittsburgh in. That Monday night game was the most proud game that I ever coached in my life. You know, I don't know any other way to play. And thank goodness my players didn't either.
The Raiders entered the playoffs with 13 wins and just one defeat. The Patriots were the only team that had beaten them. And when New England raced to a 21-10 lead, Oakland needed a miracle from Ken Stabler.
Whatever that thing was, that focus, that concentration, Snake could just step it up a notch when you needed it. We needed it. I mean, the whole season comes down to right now. We either do it and go on or we're done.
On the snap, hand off to Van Eken. He drives over. Touchdown, Raiders!
Kenny got his name the Snake for a reason. He was as cool as a cucumber. He wanted that ball. He knew he could do something. He just knew it.
Stabler back to pass on first down. He looks. He throws. He's got Casper. 28.
But the Snake's final drive stalled on New England's 29-yard line.
Third and 18. Yeah, it's a long way. Too many third longs will make you sleep on your side of the bed. You're going to get knocked around.
Straight drop back sets up. He's throwing a deep bomb. Carl Garrett. And it's broken up at the last second. For a moment, it looked like it was going to be on the button.
For years, the big games had turned against the Raiders on big calls. But seconds from defeat, the silver and black were saved by the black and white stripes.
Sugar Bear Hamilton, as I throw the ball, he hits me in the head with a forearm.
You know, he said that he didn't mean to, but he hit him in the head. They don't allow that.
The Raiders capitalized on their second chance, storming into their 7th AFC championship in the last 9 years.
Stabler rolling to the left. He's going to go. Woo! Wins it in. Kenny Stabler, touchdown, Oakland.
It was a great comeback for us, and you know, we did what we had to. Sometimes the only thing remembered is the Sugar Bear Hamilton penalty. Like we didn't do anything, and then they called a roughing the passer on Hamilton, and that gave us the game. But that's not true.
Only one team stood between the Raiders and the Super Bowl. the Pittsburgh Steelers.
We're going to have to play our best next week because we've been here before, and this is a hurdle that we got to get over.
For the third year in a row, Oakland was playing Pittsburgh for the AFC Championship.
With the Raiders and the Steelers, it's not whether you win or lose, it's whether you've got Blue Cross.
All the hype was meaningless. This was the big one. The Raiders had to win.
Swan, Atkinson, what Pittsburgh said, rivalry, it didn't mean anything at this point. We were this close to the Super Bowl, and we can't let this one get away from us.
This is Bill King at the Oakland Coliseum, the home of the Oakland Raiders. Time and again, they've arrived at this point, the AFC Championship game, only to be, in one way or another, bitterly disappointed.
The Steelers were not at full strength. Their two best running backs had been injured the week before against Baltimore.
Their excuse was not having Franco and Rocky Blyer. Woulda, shoulda, coulda. Take the guys you got and go win. The game that we lost, I mean, we didn't have any excuses. I mean, they beat us. They beat the devil out of us. And you gotta dance with the girl that you brought.
A lot of people were saying, oh, you guys are lucky you didn't have them. I wanted Franco, and I wanted Rocky. I wanted everybody. I wanted their coach to suit up. I wanted to hit them all.
And the handoff goes to Fuqua, and the whole defense piles in on top of him. Philip and Matuzak were so charged up about it, they gleefully beat each other on the helmet.
Against my defense! All of a sudden, Mr. Big Shot Frenchie Fuqua was not good enough for them anymore. He was good enough when Jack Tatum nailed him and the ball bounced over to Franco, but now he wasn't good enough. They had their people, and we stuck it to them.
He fires one, and Fuqua can't hold.
I wish that game could have gone on for 17 quarters. The Steelers got what they deserved. They got a nice butt kicking that afternoon.
Steve against the Clarence Davis. He dives. Touchdown, Raiders!
Was a time that we took over. I mean, there was a time that Miami had taken over. There was a time that Pittsburgh had taken over, and that was our turn to take over and dominate them.
Back. Here comes the rush. He gets rid of it.
We had been criticized for not being able to win the big one. John, as a head coach, not being able to win the big one. Me, as a quarterback, not being able to win the big one. After the game was in hand, and it was like a piano falling off your back.
2 minutes to the Super Bowl. 2 minutes to the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl really exists for the Oakland Raiders. All along, they've been thinking it was somebody's crazy illusion. 10 seconds to go.
The Raider crusade ended as it had begun 16 games earlier, with George Atkinson crossing paths with Lynn Swann.
George Atkinson has him. They're both standing up. The field is being engulfed by humanity.
But this time, the only casualty was the Steelers' reign as world champions.
Beating Pittsburgh was one thing, but the biggest thing was we're going to the Super Bowl. And it's in California, it's in Pasadena, and we're gonna win it.
We were so excited and having so much fun, and we had finally accomplished what we wanted to. Cigars and backslapping and high-fiving, throwing the coach in the shower.
You're just so happy. You can't wait to be in this position, and you know, you finally get there. You probably do a lot of stupid things. I mean, I probably did. I could have, you know, stuck my head in the toilet. Go to the Super Bowl. It's all the jubilation. I mean, everyone's going nuts. But I remember saying, hey, we haven't done anything yet. I mean, if we get this far and don't finish the job in Pasadena, we haven't done anything this season.
The Oakland Raiders arrived at Super Bowl XI on the threshold of greatness. A victory would cap one of the most remarkable seasons in the history of the game. Standing between the Raiders and their destiny were the Minnesota Vikings, another team that couldn't win the big one.
So here it is, the battle between two denied teams. The Vikings, who have three times been to the Super Bowl, never a winner. The Raiders, six times on the threshold, not getting here. These are hungry football teams, and the world waits to find out who's going to wear that Super Bowl ring.
I'll never forget, in the locker room before the game, Coach Madden said, this will be the single biggest event in your whole life, as long as you win.
Raider offensive line never had a finer hour. Gene Upshaw and Art Shell chewed up Minnesota's purple people eaters, and Oakland rolled up more rushing yards than any team in Super Bowl history. Behind a wall of silver and black, the snake was flawless, picking Minnesota to pieces. Sunday had been a long time coming. After 16 victories and just one defeat, the greatness of the Raiders was undeniable. And ageless cornerback Willie Brown carried them into history.
He's going all the way! Old man Willie!
Everybody around you, happy for John.
John, how's it feel?
Great. Waited a long time for
it. John was not the smallest coach in the league. John's kind of a big guy, and carrying him off the field was kind of a task, even for our biggest guys.
There it is. There's the gun sounding the end of the game. John Madden goes on the shoulders of his players.
Such a great sight to see him smile that way.
John Madden's grin is from ear to ear. He looks like a slip watermelon.
Well, I was surprised they could get me out. And the guys were carrying me, they tripped over a photographer. Then it was just like an avalanche. We all fell down, which was kind of fitting. You carry the coach off and you drop him. And that was kind of the way I was and kind of the way the Raiders were in those days.
It was just typical Madden. The biggest kid of them all was John, enjoying every single bit of it. And he had a whole bunch of reasons to win that Super Bowl game, and he got it done. He became that great coach that got him in the Hall of Fame that day. Great guy to know and great guy to have as a friend.
After a decade of dominance, the Oakland Raiders had finally earned a championship ring.
We wanted silver and black, and then we wanted a football, and then we wanted a lot of diamonds. We wanted more diamonds than anyone had before, and we wanted to be bigger than the Steelers.
The big stone in the middle represents Super Bowl XI. The 16 stones that make up the football represents the 16 victories. It has the score of the AFC Championship game against Pittsburgh, and it has pride on one side, poise on the other.
It's probably the closest thing that's an object that's me. This ring, I'm sure, means the same thing to almost all of my teammates. So proud, says world champion,
Oakland Raiders.
No one can ever take it away from you. 1976, we won this ring, and it's always ours. But bigger than the ring is the memories. You look at it and you remember all those players. And not only the big stars, but you remember them all. How they sacrificed, you remember what they did. You earned it, and you earned it by playing hard, and you earned it by winning. You earned it by being a champion.